This is Pam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Larry Groh, a licensed professional counselor, and welcome to the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have people from all around the world on the show, and I want to let people know that we are also a featured podcast on the Newsly network, and you can see the little icon says listen on Newsly. If you use the coupon code GHOST, you can try that for free for 30 days. We are a featured podcast on that network. We'll be on there later today. The other thing is we have your WisconsinWellnessPodcast.com link below. You don't have to remember that. It will be up through the whole show, but it will be clickable on all the platforms that we're on, including like the Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch that we're on now, plus all the other ones. And I want to let you know that the topic today will be dealing with change in relationships, but we're going to talk to you about your story. And before we get to that, we always ask all the guests, what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
You know, I thought about this question a lot, especially today, because I've listened to your podcast and love it. And, you know, it's interesting because I think this changes often, depending on what stage of life I'm in. But I think what I would say for me, it started actually when I was pretty young. I remember being 16 and wondering why people act the way they do. Why were people mean to other people? Why were they maybe mean to me? That sort of thing. And it started to pique my interest in psychology in general. When I got into college, I had no clue what I wanted to do. I just knew I was really interested in people. And so I just started down the path, and the more I got interested in it, the more I realized I don't know anything and I want to know more. And that hasn't changed. I still feel very similar. I feel at times like I know stuff, and then other times I'm like, I don't know anything. So that space has kept me very, very interested in constantly learning. I would say for the couples work, what got me interested in that was just working with individuals and noticing that, you know, when they were stuck in a spot in their relationship, a lot of times they didn't really know what to do to make the relationship change. And a lot of times it would be bring in your partner and let's see if we can talk about it. And you could see changes happening quicker than I would think you could have those changes, simply by the conversations we were having.
That's interesting. I think over time, you know, relationships do evolve. You know, a lot of times some people, you know, they might be in a marriage and they got married when they're very young. And then it's like, you know, the world changes, they change, they have children, the children are the focus, all the children are gone. And then it's like all those things that you were going to get to, then suddenly it's like all the kids are gone, so now you have to get to it. So you have so many distractions sometimes. It's like in your world with all the things you're doing that you like at the beginning of a relationship, it's all romantic, it's all these ideals, and then things happen, you got to settle in. And then some people don't like to settle in, you know, it's like
that when
you
get so to that settle in,
they want that, like that kind of, you know, the fire that happens when you meet somebody new. Well, over time, you know, unless you figure out how to, you know, do it in their long-term relationships, you have to figure out, you know, what did your partner like? Did you ever ask them?
Right.
Do you just assume things and then you don't talk? So, I mean, there's a lot of things I'm packing in there, but like over time, it's like I've been married since for my first wife, my only wife, and we've been married with our daughter who's 23. And, you know, I really didn't have a lot of other relationships. So I'm kind of not as sophisticated as my wife had more than I had. So I'm kind of like always like, oh, I guess I'm wrong.
That's the key right there. I think you nailed it.
I didn't have a lot of relationships, so I don't know. It's like I have an expectation that it should be like this, but it's like, okay, well, maybe it's supposed to be like that. It's like, and my daughter said, well, you don't know, Dad. So, okay, I guess you know better than me. So whatever. It's like, so you just like over time, you just, I don't know, you have to understand where you are and do you really want to be there, right? I think that's the problem. Right. Like a lot of people decide, well, I don't want to be there.
Right, right. One of the things, I mean, there's so many directions I could go with what you said, because, you know, there is that feeling for sure with a couple where that first beginning part that lasts about 18 months, maybe 2 years of, you know, being so in love with that person. We just can't stay in that stage. If we would, nobody would get out of bed. Nobody would do anything. We'd just be in bed constantly and looking at each other. So we have to recognize that that stage isn't meant to last long. It's meant to bring us towards each other and meant for us to really find somebody to mate with biologically, right? It's that's what that's there for. It's not, we're not really built to, quote unquote, have a long lasting relationship. Our brains aren't actually wired for that in that same way. Hmm. We tend to want that. And, you know, that's why we want to have a partner that stays with us throughout the years. It's more of a decision of what do I want my life to look like? And this is the person I'm going to choose. But, you know, it sounds like maybe me and you are similar when we've been with our partner for such a long time. I met my husband when I was 19, dated when we were 23, and got married when we were 28. So we're not anything like how we were at 23 years old, yet we were deciding let's be together forever. It's a big decision.
Yeah. Well, it has a lot of consequences, and, you know, you deal with like if I deal with my mom and my dad and my uncles, and they're like, you know, it's like when you get married, it's not all about that like romance thing. It's like, it's, are you going to be comfortable with this person as your friend, you know? And if you never really liked them as a friend, then they could probably have a hard time.
Because
that's the problem. Like if you have nothing to talk about, you're not on the same page at all. It's like, well, that's going to be pretty difficult.
Yeah. I feel like that's the thing with my husband. We joke a lot. And I, you know, always tell him, like, I'm glad you're funny, because otherwise we'd probably have a lot more conflicts, you know. But that right there is one of the most important things for me. Now, it might not be true for everybody, but if I'm frustrated and he makes me laugh, that just, I don't even know what I was upset about. And it works really well. But you could talk to another couple and one of the partners makes a joke and that's not going to go over well.
Doesn't work. Yeah. Well, sometimes like, are you staying together because like you're expected to, you know, the social mores. Yeah. It feels like some people feel like they're trapped. Like some people feel like, well, is it doing it because everybody expects us to be this couple? Right.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and then people don't feel right. And then they're like, if something's going to break, if you're not really, you know, connected, if there's no, you know, like I'm a musician. So if there's like a disharmony all the time, there's dissonance all the time, there's noise all the time. You don't have, there's no harmony. There's no melody. It's like out of sync. You're out of phase. You're out of tune. So unless you find a way to get back into tune, where are you going to be in this kind of dissonant state?
Yeah. And that's actually one of the most important components that I talk about with couples is that rhythm of a relationship where it has to be in that harmony, distress, and repair. And it just keeps going in that cycle. A lot of times we think no conflict would be ideal and then we'd be happy forever. But that's not how life works. And in all actuality, we're not going to grow as people. We're not going to feel closer to someone if we don't have any of the conflict or distress. So I think it helps to think about relationships that way, because there's nothing wrong then with a relationship. Yeah. It just has to do those things.
It's that ebb and flow, right? It's the ebb and flow. It's like I said, a song structure usually has some dissonance, some disharmony, something that's a little, you know, and then it comes together. Like, you know, if you think about movements and more complex type of music, there's pieces of it where, you know, it's harmonious, it's dramatic, it goes ebbs and flows, it gets louder, crescendo, decrescendo, all kinds of things. But it's not just the same, right? It starts, right. It has different parts, and some parts, you know, maybe don't look like they fit together, or they're a little confused, but that's just the nature of it. It's kind of like, you know, that's like, you know, you're living in the present, like, state, and it's a flow state type of thing. It's like that, if you can't, it's not always going to be like one thing, and you probably have this idealized vision that you want it to be, and a lot of times it's like what it ends up being is like, well, that's what it is.
I think that when couples come to see me, that tends to be one of the main components. It is the, I guess what you were saying is that idealized version of either our partner or our relationship. And there is a loss in that when we realize they aren't what we thought. Probably no one could really be what our imagination could, you know, could create for us. But that can be a grief and a sadness in that. So, you know, we talked about that first stage of falling in love, and it's wonderful and blissful. And basically we're on drugs, you know, during that time, our brain is acting as if we are on drugs. That's how excited and out of our minds we can be. But that next stage, we recognize, oh, that our partners, you know, can sometimes be cranky, or our partner can be forgetful, or whatever those things are. And we have to figure out a lot of things with that. Do we try to ask them to change, which is usually what we do? Please change that. Please be different in that area. Can you make sure that you do this from now on? Or we can change ourselves, or we can change what we have as our idea of love, you know? So it can be a mixture of all of those things.
Yeah, I think it's hard because, you know, some people don't want to find a way to effectively communicate, you know, and they don't. And you could have like this idea where, like, is there somebody who's more dominant and they're kind of saying that things should be like this? And then you're like, you're not really cool with that, but maybe you accepted it. And then eventually you reach like a tipping point and say, well, you know what? I can't even be myself. And so it's like, so instead of having like a gradual incremental kind of situation, you kind of just accepted things you really didn't want to accept and didn't talk about how you felt. And then where do you go from there? Well, it usually ends up being a problem.
It does. You're right. I see that quite often with couples I work with. I think that's a bit of why people are divorcing a bit later in life. I think it's a bit of people changing in that regards of at the beginning, they're maybe just saying okay and changing a bunch of things about themselves to accommodate that other person. And then somewhat start to realize that they're not happy and they maybe lost themselves in the relationship. And you're right, that's a problem. Then what? When I'm talking with couples, one of the things I always let them know is if you are asking for your person that you're with to make all of these changes, they're not going to be the person that you actually want to be with. They will have their own set of different, there'll be different problems that you're working with. So I always start really with clients saying, let's actually work to understand, because then maybe the problem doesn't even exist. So that is magical when that happens, where I'm with a couple and they might start talking about a particular issue that comes up. And as you're getting further and further in the communication and the discussion, you start to see that either they're arguing about the same thing, the same goal. Maybe it's to see each other more or to spend more quality time together, which comes up. They might actually both want that, but they're too fixated and on like what is going right and what's going wrong versus how do we actually get what we're both looking for here?
Yeah. And how do you define the quality time? Because somebody's quality time might be that we always go to this place in Maine, or we always go out to, you know, date night. And the other person says, well, you know what? I want to mix it up. But they don't really communicate that. They kind of expect, well, maybe this other person's going to know that. Well, with the, how are they going to know it if you never really say what you want?
Right.
You never really say what you want, then it's not going to be automatic. Like, well, maybe that's your soulmate and you think they should read your mind, but then they don't. Right. So the way you're supposed to do that.
you are so on track, because that comes up again really often, is that imagination that our partner is going to be able to read our mind and grant our wishes. And I think, as much as I'm a big music fan, I think that there might be a little bit of those messages in the music and art and, you know, that romantic. Yes.
Yeah. But they buy into the movie, the book, the song, and, you know, that's not exactly life. It's kind of hyper life. It's kind of hyper. Like, artists will kind of hyper things, you know, it's like, it's a piece, but it's like, that's 2 hour piece of life. That's a 4 minute piece of life. So it's really accelerated and over kind of blown. And it can mean something, but then you might be taking it to heart, maybe the wrong way.
right. That it must mean, a lot of times it's the meaning that we put behind those things. If that person doesn't read my mind and know what I want, a lot of times it's by now, they'll add in that if they don't know this by now, then they're not the right person for me, or they don't really pay attention to me, or they don't know me. But it could actually be that they're not understanding it fully, or it wasn't even expressed in the first place. And then there is this added piece of, if I tell that person what I want, then it doesn't mean as much.
Yeah.
That comes up.
Well, you should kind of, like, if you don't, like, well, then it's not worth anything. Like, if I have to spell it out to you, it's kind of like, you know, if you're trying to, like, who initiates? If you're always expecting a certain person, that's your idea of a romance, is this person should initiate this, right? And the other person should do this. Like, if you never talk about, what is it that you want? Like, what, how do you see that? How do you see that kind of romantic situation on date night? What do you expect to be happening? But if I have to tell you, then it's not going to be any good. Well, how am I ever going to get there?
Right.
You never really tell me. And if you were like a person that never had a lot of experience, and this is their first like relationship, like, well, I really don't know different ways of doing things. I just did it this way.
And this way I like, and this way makes sense. Yeah. And, you know, what I always tell people is just think about that idea that you ask for something that you want and your partner gives it to you. Like, that actually means something, you know. What you're wanting to have happen is for them to possibly be thinking about you a lot and a lot and a lot and a lot in order to come up with some ideas. Like you're throwing, you know, a dart at a dartboard. Yeah. But, and sure, that's a lot of effort. But what typically happens is a lot of conflicts with all of the things that they might be getting wrong as they're shooting that dart at the dartboard.
Yeah. Cause it's like, you know, you don't know what your preferences are. You know, maybe you're supposed to like somehow know, cause maybe. Yeah, it depends. It's like, did you have enough experience with, you know, multiple people in romantic relationships to kind of mature with your ability to have relationships and learn? So, if, like, a lot of things, human beings, we have to have lessons learned. Everything we do, you know, your artist, or everything we do, we learn, right? But do we actually learn, like, how to communicate and how to be in a relationship? Does anybody ever really teach us? We kind of stumble through it. Right? We just stumble into it. Like, it's not like you're like the 3-point shot that I spent 1,000 shots trying to do it, or my bass guitar. I did like 10,000 hours on my bass guitar, or my 10,000 hours on my keyboard. But how many hours did I actually practice actually trying to communicate with my partner?
Well, yeah, you know, I think you just stumbled. You stumbled on an amazing idea. I think a million-dollar idea. it would be relationship training, and you just have to communicate like over and over and over and over and over again. That would be really cool.
If it feels comfortable, it kind of becomes like the, you know, this automatic thing. If I pick up my bass guitar, it's kind of muscle. Like I don't have to look at it. Right. Mm-hmm. You just kind of know what to do. Like if I hear something on a drummer play on my keyboard, I just know what to do. So yeah. If you can get this kind of muscle mind memory, that's like, I know where to be, what to do. I think sometimes people don't know, and they just do the same thing that they've always done because that's what they know, but they don't have a lot of alternatives. Mm-hmm. And I think that causes trouble.
It does. And you bring up another really good point about change. And when a couple wants to change some things in their relationship, one of the first issues that tends to come up is that it doesn't feel authentic, or it doesn't feel quite right. And, you know, what I just encourage people to remember is that it's going to feel like you're doing something different or something mm-hmm. new. Your body and your mind aren't prepared yet. They're not practiced yet. Those skills aren't practiced. So take that as a signal that you are doing something different, and you can get some different, potentially some different results from that. But it's sort of like eating with your, you know, the other hand. It's going to feel really weird. And it's supposed to feel weird, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a hard thing to kind of get to, because a lot of times it's that, you know, if you're in that kind of in the moment, you know, a lot of people are scared of being vulnerable and authentic. And, you know, like I'm a creative person, it's like a lot easier for me to just clone something that's already been done. Right.
Yeah.
It's harder for me to go and be vulnerable and reveal something that it hasn't been done. And then it's like, well, nobody knows how to take that because they haven't heard that. So a lot of times, like if I was a musician, if I go and do a bass line that's been, you know, you've heard this, like 5,000 songs have this kind of bass because it's part of the genre. Then it's more likely that you're going to say, well, that could work. But if you do something like nobody ever heard that, you say, well, that probably doesn't work. Well, maybe it doesn't work because you never heard it. So you immediately just say it's terrible without giving it a shot, unless you're kind of a cutting edge type of person. You're like a Hendrix or a Miles Davis. You're confident enough to do it. But how many people are that confident?
Not a lot in relationships. not a lot. There's not a lot of confidence when it comes to being vulnerable in relationships. And that's a great way to illustrate it, of what we are used to hearing and what we're used to receiving makes it really challenging to make changes and to do things differently, because it takes trust. It takes that ability to be vulnerable and say, okay, if I'm going to say what I'm feeling here, will I be okay if it doesn't work the way I intend it to work, or if it doesn't come out the way that I intend it to come out, will I still be okay? And so I do think that that holds people back of, at least I know if I say this to my partner, I know what's going to happen next, or I can guess a little bit better.
Predictable.
But if I if I say, hey, actually that hurts my feelings when you don't call me back, you know, really vulnerable, but that's not normally how we say it. We're like, what were you doing that you couldn't call me back? What was so important that you couldn't call me back? You know?
You don't tell me the exact truth. It's not the exact truth. It's kind of going around the edges because you don't want to get into it. And I think it's like the hard thing to do is to be that authentic, vulnerable self where you actually say what you really mean, which a lot of times, you know, where everybody's going like past each other. You know, if you're like, are you really listening, or are you trying to like respond to like, you know, something, but you didn't actually take in what was said. You're so busy trying to respond with the comeback without actually hearing what somebody said. So you're like not actually getting it because you're missing like half of what they said because you didn't listen to it.
Yep. And that happens a lot too, where I try to have my my couples summarize to some extent. And again, that feels very weird because we're not used to repeating what someone is saying in a conversation. But when they do that step, a lot of times they will notice, oh, I didn't really hear what this person was saying. I picked up on one word that triggered me, and now I'm saying something in response to that. And yeah, so, I wish that that was something that was practiced, which is that summarizing and active listening, because I really, truly believe a big chunk of our conflicts would be non-existent if we just double checked. Hey, is this what you meant to say?
What happens in business? Yeah. I mean, I work people in business and they'll swear. And then what we do, I'm a software developer. So we record our meetings and it creates these AI transcripts. And it actually puts down like what you said, and it has the audio. And then we go back and somebody will say, well, I don't remember you guys ever saying it was this. And then we go back and say, well, look, at this minute 15, 20, you said A, B, C, and now you said you never said that. And it's like, well, that's what we went with when we designed this because you said that. And then they go, oh, I don't know. I said that's what you did.
Yeah.
Like in the computer, they don't know anything other than zeros and ones. They only know on and off. So if you tell me ABC algorithm, I'm going to go do it. And if that's not right, well, you shouldn't have told me. So we kind of were able to kind of rewind. And I said, well, if you do that kind of rewind in real life with a partner or your family, you find that you're probably missing all this stuff. Because I see it every day. And the business means people missing all this stuff. And it's like, well, they're missing that. So you're probably missing this.
Right. That is so true. And I wonder if AI will be integrated somehow in couples work, because there's definitely couples that would want, to record or, to focus in on, well, this is what was said, or that's what was said, which really doesn't get anyone anywhere unless we have AI or somebody transcribing, what was said in this conflict and argument. So, one thing that I try to help couples do in that is focus less on the content and let's talk about the feelings that were coming up, because there's no way that you're going to know exactly what somebody intended, exactly what they said word for word. What you're going to be doing in that conversation is letting that other person know, this, when I hear this word or this thing, this is what happens to me. And that can change a lot.
Triggers, right?
Yeah.
And these triggers could be because you've got like post-traumatic stress or some kind of traumatic thing. And so if somebody triggers you and they don't fully understand because you've never told them that like this thing happened to you, and every time you do X, it triggers me and I withdraw. And then you don't know why they're withdrawn. It's like, why are they withdrawn? Or why do they get mad? Or why do they do X? Whatever they do, whatever the action is. And you're like, well, you start to learn, like, maybe I got to be careful with this phrase or these actions, because if I do that, it causes this. If you're aware, but sometimes people are like, oh, am I even aware of that?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Because that we all have triggers, doesn't really matter, how we grew up or what happened, there's going to be some triggers from childhood. So, I always remind people that as well, of it could be something, that may be insignificant to someone else, but for you, this was something that stood out and caused you pain, and your pain is your pain. And you're going to have a reaction to that. Now, as an adult, you have a partner that maybe does that same thing or something that looks a bit like it. You'll have that same reaction that is much bigger than whatever that partner did. And you got to figure out together what to do with that. Because a partner can't really change how they're acting all the time to make you feel more comfortable. But at the same time, you can ask them to be more mindful of, hey, this this behavior. Like, for instance, not calling someone back, right? Maybe their parent was absent or not very involved. And so that triggers a big reaction. But talking a bit about it, like you mentioned, talking about, hey, this is what my pain is. And when you do this, this is what happens to me. I feel like I'm not important or I'm not valuable or you could care less about me. And then the partner can say, well, that's not at all what's happening for me. And this is what's actually happening is I'm distracted all the time and I don't know what I'm doing when I'm getting, you know, 40 different things going on at work.
You know? No, it wasn't meant as a slight, because sometimes people think like that's an active slight. It could be like, it's not an active slight. It's like this person is so kind of topped out because they're like doing something like their job, their stress. Like a lot of things are stress, whether it's your job or whatever. And you have stress. So your partner is stressed and you're stressed and they're doing things that stress you out. It's like, if you don't talk about it, you're like, what is it? Like, is that person's boss stressing them out so much that they can't remember the things that are important to you and they just forget it because they're so caught up in trying to satisfy their boss that they don't think about the things that are important to you. And then you thinking it's like, well, they're purposely slighting me. And it's like, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's something else. But you didn't talk about it. So you have no idea.
Right. That inner dialogue isn't being shared. So there's no way or reason really to debunk that or to challenge it because that's not even brought to anyone's attention. But that's also, like we were talking about, very vulnerable to say that. Hey, you know, this is what I think. When you do this, this is what I think, and this is the story I'm telling myself. And, you know, is that true? You know, asking them directly, is that true? Is that what's happening? Most of the time, it's not. Yeah.
Well, you wear a mask, you know, you have so many masks. You have a mask you wear when you're at work. You might have a mask that you have for your kids because you tell them to do this, but you do that. Mm-hmm. So you're telling them, you know, so there's so many contradictions in how we present ourselves, you know, and then it's like, if you've got a lot of contradictions in terms of like the face you put up and really if that's not really like your authentic self, then you're kind of putting on like a show or you're putting on this mask probably to protect yourself, you know, you're putting these different things on and then it's like, well, how many layers do you have? And like, when do you actually get real with anybody?
Yeah. And I think it's definitely different for different people on how vulnerable that they can be. But you're right, it is protective. That is another main thing that I focus on with couples is figuring out for them, what are those things that show up to protect you? You know, if you're being critical of your partner, believe it or not, that's probably a protective quality or a protective part that's showing up. And that protective part was keeping you in check originally. It was, hey, if I critique myself, if I tell myself, don't do that, don't say that, or you shouldn't do this, then I'm protecting myself for potential rejection from other people. And then what happens in a partnership is we start doing that to them. But usually it's a little bit less than what's going on for ourselves. They don't know that usually. They think, oh my gosh, they must think they're up here and I'm down here. But a lot of times that inner critic is much, much worse internally than externally. But it is really about the protective part of what that negative behavior is. If we can say to ourselves, my partner's doing this because they're trying to protect themselves or they're maybe more critical when they're anxious, doesn't make the behavior okay, but you don't have to take it to heart and it doesn't have to be as painful.
Yeah, it's kind of personal. You know, the personal, it's kind of thing like when you're vulnerable and you put something out, that's the fear of the reaction. like the hater reaction, like or they hate everything I'm proposing. So then sometimes, well, I won't even propose it because I'm going to get a bad reaction, right? Like, maybe I don't have a right to propose it because I've been kind of put into this position where I'm kind of not the, you know, in the alpha, right? I'm not, mm-hmm. I'm kind of always like not in the lead. So I don't know. I mean, like, how do you get to a more balanced and harmony? You know, I'm kind of a Buddhist, and we kind of think about harmony and balance. And if you're in a situation that's way out of balance, and you can't ever seem to do anything right, and you're always being directed, and you kind of put yourself in that situation where you haven't gotten out of it, like, well, you don't seem to have any kind of self-determination.
Well, and that's a great question on how to balance that. And that is really where couples counseling can be the most effective and beneficial, because both people are somewhat agreeing loosely, hopefully concretely, that we're going to listen to this person. You know, we're going to come in and see this person. They're going to help us. And what I see is the therapist's job is to help balance the power dynamic that can sometimes be there in a couple. There's obviously some limitations, of course, like if there's any physical aggression or violence, right? That's a different, totally different thing, different topic, different podcast. But that idea of talking to somebody can help that dynamic. They can help regulate that power difference, because basically what you're doing as a therapist is going to the person that tends to have more of that dominance or power, and you're telling them the truth in a really caring way, but you're telling them, hey, what you're doing here is really critical. You are saying a bunch of mean things to your partner, and that's going to have to change, or the relationship is going to unfold in a way that you don't want it to. And just really being honest with the client of, listen, you're here for a reason. And I could talk to you about having better communication, but that's only one little piece of what's happening here. The communication is based off of the power difference. And if that's not regulated, then what's really going to happen with couples work is the one that has more power will just get better at harnessing the power, you know, they get better tactics. And I mean, I'm making it sound very malicious, but that is one of
dynamic where you actually logically make some kind of things that, well, don't you agree with that? Don't you think that's the best decision? And then you always are kind of getting your way, because everything you've always mapped out ends up being in your corner. You end up winning the chess match every time. It's like, you're playing chess and they're playing checkers. You keep on winning. And it's not that you want to do it that way, but it's like some people, that's the way they kind of been built to operate, like in the microcosm. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'm going to win every argument. I'm going to logically do that. And if you're the type of, you know, kind of dynamic personality, you want to be like a leader and you're trying to run things, it's like you might always run like that rather than saying, like, shouldn't you have some respect for your partner's opinion? It's like if you're in a band, if you're in a band and you're the lead songwriter and you got three other people in the band and all of them are songwriters, but you're like the lead, and like your decisions always end up being on the top, and you say, well, this is what always works. We always get number ones when I do it. Right. And then you never listen to anybody else. And eventually the band breaks up because then you never allowed anybody else to ever have a voice. It was always you driving the whole thing. Because that eventually doesn't work. The bands break up because it's like I want to be able to have my song on the record. Right. I want to be able to play this song. I want to be able to do this part. Like, you always say, no, I don't like that part. And you got to have some respect when you're in that kind of in a relationship that's like, listen and value the other person.
Right. And I would imagine that that creates a much better experience for the listener and for the band. It's more dynamic. It's more interesting. we know how to do our thing that we do, whatever that is. And we can do that all day long. It isn't until somebody else maybe comes in and says, how about we do this a little differently? Or, hey, what if you let go of some control in this spot and see how that feels? You can bring
the whole partnership. Like if you're in a band, it's four people or five people.
Yeah.
But it will, like the dynamic is like, oh, wow. You're like, this changes the whole like project. Like it opens it up and it becomes like what we tend to say is like more expansive. Because if you only have one person's mind running everything, you get that only that limited lane. If you allow other people to bring stuff in and then you let it happen, then it will be very expansive. It will be like a growth kind of mindset rather than kind of being in a, you know, we're doing this formula all the time. It's the same thing all the time.
Right. And that is really important when we're talking about change and growth in relationships, because, you know, what sometimes gets people stuck is that partnership isn't necessarily growing together in a positive way, or one individual is feeling stifled, or both are feeling that way. And, you know, that can keep us in a really stuck position. It is how systems work, though. I mean, ideally, there is that but a system works in trying to keep itself stable and regulated. And so when somebody does try to make a change, that other person
throws it off a little bit. Yeah, it throws it off, but it sometimes there's a benefit where you get thrown off and like you go from bebop into fusion. Right. So somebody says, like, why don't we bring rock and elements into jazz? Well, that's very disconcerting to some people. And they're like, there's no way I'm doing that because that's like a jarring. That's not jazz. But when you do it, it opens it up. And it opens it up and allows you to have, there are different players that do this. There's different individuals, there's different engineers, there's different producers, there's different audience. Opens up a whole different thing. That if you just stayed in bebop, well, you're a bebop, that's the formula. And you could be in that for the rest of your life. Or you could say, well, you know what? I want to try something else. I'm going to expand. And expansion is hard. It's hard to expand. It's hard to do the growth because you're going into kind of that bleeding edge of the bell curve. Like you're not in the middle, you're going to the edge. And then some people, when they see that edge, they say, well, that's not right. You're supposed to be like in the box. In a lot of times, like if you're like a creative person that likes to push it, like you're not in the box, you're kind of out of the box,
right. You might be looking at the box a little bit, but
kind of push it. A guy like a David Bowie, he would go do something like a Ziggy Stardust and then change, go to Aladdin and say, it's like, well, that's not Ziggy at all. So he'd lose fans, people who love Ziggy Stardust, and like he goes and does Aladdin and saying, like, well, what was that? He would lose fans. He'd go from the thin white dude. He's like, well, he'd come up with these new ideas, new personas. He just changed the whole thing. It's very dynamic. He's like, not really done a lot where you actually totally shift. And that's a very creative place to be. And he used to say, like, you know, the order to be really advanced is to kind of feel like you're kind of in the water and you're not touching the bottom. You're almost going to make you're kind of not comfortable. You're going to be in this situation where you're not going to drown, but it's going to be hard. You're going to have to tread water. You're going to have, it's not something, you know, so you're going to, and he used to say, I have to put myself in that kind of scenario to kind of grow.
Right. And how true is that? Yeah. And it's also true with losing people when you're changing and making changes that maybe hopefully it's to be healthier, but like you said, he maybe would lose fans, or other people would maybe say, oh, that's not what I'm used to, so goodbye. That happens in relationships as well. And that can be really scary for individuals too, that are maybe trying to change. Or, you know, one thing I'll see sometimes is if somebody quits a substance, or they quit eating certain foods or going out as much, and the partner is used to it and likes, you know, some parts of it, probably not all the parts, but like some parts of it. But the real thing is that it's hard to change, and they might not necessarily even consciously be thinking, I don't want this change. They might be encouraging the change, like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go. Let's make the change. But when it starts to happen, all of a sudden, there are some behaviors and some things that show up. And it makes it really easy for us to go right back into our typical behaviors and our typical things that we do. And you're right, it's uncomfortable. And that sometimes lasts quite a bit. So I let people know it's meant to be uncomfortable, and you will feel uncomfortable, but you can't get to that next stage if you just kind of go right back into what's comfortable. You're going to just be kind of in that stuck relationship.
Yeah, if you have a partner, like, they used to going out to Friday night to the bar to a show, and it's not that they, you know, they're an alcoholic or anything, but they might have said, well, you know what, I don't want to be around that because maybe it's not where my place is. But your partner's still like, well, I like to go to these shows, and now suddenly you don't want to go to these shows. You want to totally change up. It's something we've done for the last like 10 years.
Yeah.
And that can be very significant. Like if like that person really thought that was a big part of their life, and then suddenly, oh, I'm not doing that anymore.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes that happens with empty nesters, or people in that stage of retirement. And, you know, I've worked with couples before where they've decided to separate or divorce, and it's not a failure. It is a decision of, this is what I want my life to be moving forward. I want to, for instance, traveling is one that comes up. I want to be traveling all the time. My partner wants to read and sit at home. Well, yeah. Unless you can really figure that out, which
it's hard.
You know, you could maybe read in that hotel room, but it is a really difficult thing to figure out. And
it's not going to work if somebody's a homebody and they feel comfortable just reading a book and watching Netflix and doing like they just staying in town. And you got somebody, well, I want to go to London, I want to go to Paris, I want to go to Egypt, I want to go, right? And so I've kind of set my retirement plan, and they get to retirement, and then the partner said, well, I don't want to do that. And that was like their mindset was like, well, that's what I'm going to do when I retire. And then I find out, oh, you're not with that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. It can be really heartbreaking. And, you know, there are ways to figure some of those things out. And you brought up the box, right? And being a lot of times with relationships, we tend to think it all has to be in a certain way, but maybe they figure out something that seems to work well for them. Maybe it's, hey, go with your best friend and travel all over and come back and bring me a souvenir.
You know? Find that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. If you're willing to be more like expansive too, like, okay, my partner likes to go to these jazz clubs, but I don't really like it. And he does that, and he's not going to go and get another partner there. He's into jazz. That's what he's into. That the person's into jazz, and it's not like it's a threat to you. It's like, that's just something they like, you don't like. Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe find things that you do like.
Yeah,
that you can agree on, and find times where you can be together, but you still each can have your own thing. You know, I mountain bike. My wife doesn't like it. She doesn't like coming down mountains at 40 miles an hour. She's like, no, that's dangerous. I'm not going to do it. So like, if I go off and do that, it's not like, well, yeah, it's going to take some time. It's like, there's certain time I'm going to do that with my mountain bike buddies. That's what I'm going to do. And then she has some other things she does. You know, she's in these, she's a playwright. She does plays. Like, I could be there and support it. We're like, write music for it or whatever. But, you know, that's what she's going to do. And they could take a lot of time to put that play on. Well, that's what she wants to do. And like, I'm not going to say, well, like, she can't do that. That's what she wants to do. Everybody can have the thing that they want. And then we'll just have things that you want to do together. Oh, we like to go to this restaurant, or we like to go to the Barbados and like once a year. And we both agree that's a cool thing. So we do that. So, you know, so if you find the things that you can agree on and the things that you can be independent on without thinking, like some people think they got to do everything together.
Right. Maybe that's, right.
But maybe that's the wrong mindset.
Yeah. It is about changing the mindset and letting go again of those ideals or the thing you thought it was going to be. And yes, that could be really hard. One of my jokes that my husband and I talk a lot about is Pearl Jam is why we are together and staying together so that we have somebody to go to Pearl Jam concerts with. And we are going to a couple. They're touring again, but having something like that together. Well, he sees other bands and I know that he does not want to see some of the bands I'm seeing. It doesn't really take away anything. It actually adds better conversations, you know, different conversations. It's not going to be boring then. We're not going to just go over the Pearl Jam concert again and again and again and how awesome it was, which we do, but it's also kind of fun to hear about other things and other experiences.
I think it's when you have a situation where like it's kind of my way or the highway type people, or you got to do everything together when it doesn't really work, right? Mm-hmm. And allowing that kind of, well, you're two different people. You're together, but you might have different things you like, different things you mm-hmm. like to do, different people you hang around with for different things, right? And it's like it doesn't mean I have to be in on my wife's like she's a female artist and she has these female groups and they get together. It's like, well, I don't need to be in that meeting because I'm not even supposed to be in that meeting.
Right.
Why would I ever insert myself in that? I'm not even supposed to even be there.
right. Yeah. And I think what gets us in trouble sometimes is, you know, again, the ideals that we might have, but also over-identifying with our partner and thinking that we think the same way or that we want the same things. And that comes up pretty frequently too, where an individual would say, they're acting in this way. If I was them, I would never do that. So therefore, you know, they're either rude or selfish and don't care about me, because if that was me, I would call, or I would write a note, or I would hug me when I get home. And that can get in the way too of really mm-hmm. having more of a respect and collaboration with our partners.
Yeah. I mean, you have to kind of know, I mean, if you don't know what your partner, who kind of like their default positions, like their default mm-hmm. behavior, and they could try to like force them. But if you realize like, this is the person that we have, like my papa, like he had certain things. My mom would go crazy. Like, well, that's papa. Everybody's like, well, that's his papa. That's what he does.
Yeah.
At some point, you're like, okay, well, he's always going to leave his shoes in the wrong place. I mean, he's not supposed to, but he's like, and it really ticks my mom off. But, you know, 30 years doing the same thing is like, I don't know if that's changing anytime soon.
It's probably not. Yeah. Yep. And that's an important thing, too, of figuring out, you know, what is actually going to make you feel less distressed? Is it, you know, is it to say move those shoes? Is it deciding like that's him? Is it making a game out of it? Which is one of my favorite things to do is see if you can be playful with it. You know, if you can laugh about something, it doesn't impact us the same way. If you can, you know, hide the shoes and watch, and you know, you're both laughing, you both have to be laughing. You know, what happens then? Because we should know, hopefully, that we're not perfect. And, you know, the more you can laugh with your partner about what are those things we are not perfect about, I feel like the more accepted you can feel, the more you reduce shame of, oh, I did this wrong. I forgot this. And your partner's like laughing and teasing and you're laughing and teasing along with it.
Yeah.
The less painful that some of those things can be, because you realize this person loves me for me and doesn't really matter if I, you know, forget this or forget that. I mean,
yeah, I mean, yeah,
it might matter in the moment.
You're totally right, but because sometimes everybody takes it so serious. If you get into it like the serious and cause an argument, when if you throw in inject humor or kind of, you know, it like lessen the impact by not, you know, by making it more humorous or injecting that kind of point of view, you know, the alternative method of how you get triggered, you know, or how what the triggers are. And starting to see like what's the priority of this? Is it something that's like that's a really bad problem and it probably is not good, versus something's an annoyance. Like they go to like 1 to 10. You know, if it's like, you know, it's like is the 10 like the worst thing or the 1? It depends on your scale. Like where are you on this? Where is that on the scale? Like should you actually be having an argument for 2 hours about something that's only like a level 1? Instead of a level 10.
And what are you arguing about then? Because a lot of times people don't even know at the end of that conversation what were we even talking about. No clue, but I know I had to win it, or I know that I had to get my point across, or it wasn't actually the thing, it was the way you said it, you know. And that comes up really often too, and that can be a hard thing to rectify and to change. But for a lot of people, it's really about how we're having those arguments versus what it is.
That kind of goes to respect and language use, right?
Yeah.
And you know, how, if you start to understand, like there are people with old words don't matter. Well, think about the words you've been saying all day to everybody you know, and then see how they react to your words and tell me they don't matter. So it's like if you don't really understand the impact of the things that you come out of your mouth, then maybe that needs to be like a kind of a lesson to understand. Like if that happens, if this you switch it around and make it something important to you, and then somebody tells you X, like what do you feel? You know, they suddenly now that person felt slighted. You don't think it matters, but then take something important to you and do it to you, and like, oh, now it matters.
Right. Yeah, I do see, you know, with individuals that sometimes it's low self-esteem that comes up and why they think they might not have that impact on their partner, because they might think what they say doesn't actually really matter. And so talking about it, you know, together really does make a huge impact of saying, hey, that did hurt me. You know, I've been playing it off for a while, maybe several years, but it does hurt me when you say that, or, you know, it's taken me some time to feel comfortable saying it, but that hurts my feelings. That can be really powerful for a couple. It doesn't, that bringing up something negative doesn't have to be a negative experience. It can be, hey, you matter enough to me that what you think about me matters.
Yeah, it's kind of like the red, like if you had a teacher that gives you red marks all over your paper.
Yeah.
And it feels like, and then it just feels like, oh, you're getting embarrassed, right? Versus a teacher that doesn't do it that way. That comes at you and says, there's some really good points in this paper. There's really good stuff. They talk about them. But there's little minor problems here. I remember having an English professor, that teacher that did, you know, one that was this red mark and never said anything good about anything in it, you know, that you were doing it mostly was this red marking, versus the one that would find the good things, point out that, and then also say, well, you know, you can fix this and fix. I was more into being around the person that found the good, and they kind of still told me about what was wrong.
Yeah.
But didn't make that the priority, you know?
Yeah.
There's a way to kind of do things where you want somebody to give you the feedback versus like, I don't know if I want the feedback from this person again, because all they do is the way they do it, the way they give you the feedback.
Right. Because what it comes down to, I think, is that connection that you have with that person. If they know you care enough about them to sit down and actually go through, hey, this is what could use some work, right? It's a totally different experience. This person cares about me and is telling me these things to make me better. And you can feel, I just feel like you can feel that difference versus somebody just, you know, maybe like this and you got to you know, follow these rules, or this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. Why did you even write?
And then you're like, yeah, you don't totally want to be in that class again. You don't, want to be, you don't want to be around that person again. You start to like, wow, this person is triggering me. They're freaking me out. They're stressing me out. And you're like, and I think you can learn from that. Like, there's a way, you know, with, even with your kids, if you're coming and lording over your kid, he's like, well, you did this, instead of actually giving them a lesson learned and explaining. Yeah. And over time, you know, I've learned, because my papa had a different way of doing it. And then, you know, with my daughter, I was like, you know, there was things I didn't like what my papa did. And I said, well, you know, I talked to my wife. It's like, I really didn't like the way he did this with our daughter. You know, how could we do that, say something without doing that? And she had the same experience where her parents had been kind of harsh. And we tried to do it different with our daughter because we had experienced that. And we're both college educators. And we had the discussion about how we should approach based on the, you know, lessons learned. We didn't like some of the things our parents did. And we didn't necessarily want to repeat it. And we had to kind of a self-analysis to say, like, potentially we could repeat it if we don't talk about it.
Yeah. Yes, 100%, because that's going to be that knee-jerk reaction. And what an important conversation, and what a gift to give your daughter too, of, you know, recognizing the things that you didn't like is one piece of it. And then doing the work to do something different is, that's hard. It's hard work. It's so useful in parenting. It's useful in relationships of figuring out, you know, how does this actually impact my child, or how does this impact my partner? Really sitting with that and thinking about that, it allows for changing the way that we communicate and the way that we are telling our, you know, our critique or our complaint tends to be more important, that they actually feel connected. And the second part is, could you do this a little different? Or could we work on this? Because most people aren't really going to hear that blasted sort of thing that, you know, I remember my parents doing that as well. And, you know, that definitely, you do one of these things. I have earphones on, but you want to plug those ears. Yeah. I can't take in anymore. Well, they're not hearing you anyways. So you're just kind of yelling for yourself then, you know?
Well, one of the, time always goes by quicker than we ever think, but I like to ask a couple of questions at the end. Yeah. In terms of like, are there three like major lessons learned over time that you've been doing the work you do that you think are important that you can relate to the audience?
Yeah, great question. And I think it is about figuring out for yourself actually what's most important in your relationship, as far as figuring out, is it to be kind and to be connected? Or is it to be right? So figuring out that, which hopefully it goes into the relationship piece, but just understanding that, I also recognize that for couples work, it's hard and can be really disheartening at times. So giving yourself grace and compassion when you're trying to change something in a relationship. And then also to see if you can separate yourself from what your partner is telling you their experience is like, because what tends to happen is it's harder for us to hear when it feels like it's coming at us. And if you can just take a minute and recognize that they're talking about their experience, and you can be there for them without feeling like you need to defend yourself. So figure that's takes a bit. But I think one of the main things with couples work is being able to do that. It can be a huge component in changing the dynamics in a relationship.
Well, I think that's awesome advice. You know, I think you could take it to heart that, you know, it's a lot of work probably to just, it's not, I don't think things are, people always want the instant kind of gratification. Yeah. Like, I'm going 0 to 100 and solve this with like the magic pill. And a lot of times it's like, you know, it usually doesn't work like that.
No. Yeah. And when they come into couples counseling, to be fair, they've been experiencing this pain and struggle for usually about 6 years before somebody comes in to see somebody. So they're already at a point of, I need this to, like, I need this pain, this, you know, frustration to be over with, actually years ago, but, you know, can we do this quickly? Can we do this in, you know, 6 months, 1 month, whatever the case. And, you know, it is about being patient with yourself and thinking about that time as a learning experience, not a time where you just get whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to thank you for being on the podcast. I want to do mention the link that we have, the Wisconsin Wellness Podcast.com. So that's your podcast, but if you click on that, does that also, or you can tell people when they click on that, is that a link to how to reach you?
Yeah. So they can go to WisconsinWellnessPodcast.com and I have all of my information on there. I have a lot of articles, worksheets, information about different guests, and they'll find my contact information on there as well.
Okay. So we do encourage listeners, if they want to dive deeper and to get, you know, to connect with the guest, that we recommend that you click on the links that we provide. And those are clickable when we're published. We were just on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. So if you go to those after we end this, that link is actually clickable and everywhere that we're going to be published, because we're on all the major podcast platforms, whether you watch or listen to podcasts, by tomorrow, you'll be able to do that. So again, thank you for being a guest on the Family Electric Ghost podcast. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, this is awesome. I love talking with you. Thanks again.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.